And we're back here on the Mouthpiece Wrestling Show, NBC Sports Radio, 1510 AM Boston, and the Mouthpiece Radio Network. It is our distinct privilege now to welcome to the program a recently inducted, a freshly minted WWE Hall of Famer, and really one of the great wrestling stars of the past decade. He recently stepped down from professional wrestling after battling a neck injury that really he had to tough through in a very inspiring fashion through the latter part of his career. He was one of the biggest stars on WWE for the past, what, 6, 7, 8 years, and a multi-time world champion. He joins us now on the program. The Rated R Superstar Edge is with us. Edge, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Freshly minted. I like that.
You like that? I was reaching all around, and that's what I pulled out of the sky there, so that's what it's going to be.
I like it.
Well, we're here in some part, Edge, to talk about, of course, your life after wrestling, and it includes a recurring series of appearances on the sci-fi series Haven, which premiered its third season on September 21st. It comes on right after Friday Night SmackDown at 10 p.m. in the East. Talk to us a little bit about getting into the world of television acting after a lifelong career in pro wrestling.
Yeah, it was, I keep saying it was a happy accident. I've done some acting over the years, just sporadic things here and there between, you know, the WWE schedule, but it was always things, that WWE asked me to do, whether it was, you know, a small part in a Highlander movie when I first started, or Mad TV, or Mind of MC, or one of the WWE movies. So when I was forced to retire, it was like, okay, well, I got a completely open schedule now. And with the partnership with Sci-Fi and everything, they asked me if I would want to be a part of the show, originally just, the one-off, kind of one-episode type thing. And then thankfully, I guess they liked what they saw. And I had a great time doing it, too. And I thought, well, I can't wrestle anymore, so maybe this is a nice little creative outlet to still have to be able to kind of get those juices flowing and get them out, kind of thing, for lack of a better term. So it has been a lot of fun, but it wasn't something that I went and looked for. It's just kind of the dominoes have fallen into place, and thankfully, like I said, it still gave me that outlet that I realized after this year and a half of being retired or more now that I definitely need.
Excellent. Now, I'm sure in a lot of ways your career in wrestling prepared you for acting, but I'm sure in some other ways it didn't. I'm sure in some other ways maybe it even drove into you some instincts that don't actually apply to television acting, as opposed to getting out in front of a live crowd every Monday and Friday and Sunday and talking on the microphone and sort of exuding a different type of persona, a different type of way of expressing yourself. Can you talk about the ways both in which wrestling prepared you for screen acting and also the ways in which it sort of maybe was difficult in terms of the instincts it drilled into you that you had to overcome?
Well, without a doubt, there was both. That was one of the things. I mean, it definitely, wrestling WWE and being in front of a live camera, in front of a live audience, it gives you the adaptability, be able to think on your feet, be able to ad-lib. If something's not going quite right, hey, let's change the path here. Let's listen to reactions. That's working. Let's go down this path. With TV and with screen, it's much different. It's do something 30 times, and if something hits, maybe go along that path and do that multiple times, then switch the lighting, then do this and do that. So the differences in that I had to get used to. Also, the differences in the idea of with wrestling, it's larger than life, and you're essentially playing superheroes, so everything has to be bigger. The movements, the facial mannerisms, everything that you do has to translate to someone that could be, 80,000 people away, kind of thing. With screen, I mean, it's right there. It's right on you. It picks up every little quiver, every little facial tick, stray nose hair. I mean, you name it, and it's going to pick it up. So that was one of the things I had to consciously think of, was pulling back, especially being, I really translated a lot with my eyes in the ring, and whether it was bulging them out or looking manic or whatever it was, I always thought, okay, that's the gateway to people understanding what emotion that I have in this match right now. And that has to be pulled back a lot, because it can be so subtle with the camera being that tight to your face.
In your career at WWE, did you see an evolution in how scripted your interviews were in terms of when you started there in the late 90s, 97, 98? Was there a lot more ad-libbing in your interviews as opposed to later on where it seemed like they began to more heavily write and script word for word some of the things the wrestlers said out on TV?
I guess it's different for everybody, but mine got less.
Oh, yeah?
You know, initially because, you know, the first time we're out there, and you know, we would ad-lib a lot of our comedic stuff, but we would sit there and you know, kind of toss at the wall ideas and have a pretty good idea of what we were going to do because they were involved with, you know, the 5-second poses and things like that. So there was only so much wiggle room with those because we had to hit, you know, marks and space and, you know, things like that in order to make the pose make sense and make it work. It was tough to ad-lib, especially when you had a bunch of moving parts if we threw in Kurt and Kurt Angle into the mix too.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then as I got more comfortable and as they realized that, okay, he's good to go, you know, they know I work well, give me bullet points, I'll fill in the gaps.
You think it's tougher for the younger guys, Edge, in terms of, you know, they get into the company, they start out and they're scripted a lot more heavily, and they can't from the very beginning necessarily get comfortable in their own skin and get comfortable doing the things that will help them stand out and really speak to their own personality? It sounds like in the beginning they really want to script a lot of what you say, and it's kind of an uphill climb to let your own personality shine through.
You know what? I never had that problem because I just, okay, take what you give me, but I'm still going to make it my own.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can go out there and sound like a robot, or you can go out and have inflection and emotion and anger and sadness and happiness and goofiness. I mean, that's entirely up to the person. You can be Robert De Niro and read off a script, but guess what? He's going to make it Robert De Niro.
Right.
So if you can put your own shackles on yourself, or you can take what's given to you and go, okay, cool, we can make this work. And still, even if you verbatim say what is written there, you can still make it your own and put your own little nuances in there, whether it's through your movements or your actions or just the emotion that you convey. Thankfully, you know, like I said, I work best with bullet points. Okay, what are we trying to get across here? Cool, we got 8 minutes. I'll fill it.
Now, of course, go ahead.
No, that's a fun thing to be able to do. And I think once the WWE sees that you can invest in something, and to me the biggest part is commitment,
mm-hmm.
is committing to a character or committing to a storyline. Once you do that, then I think some of those restraints will come off and go, okay, he's good to go.
Now, of course, your character in the WWE, Edge, went through several different iterations. You were several different people in your career, but your most successful run at the tail end was as the Rated R Superstar. I have to wonder, and I'm sure you joke about this or people bring it up to you, you'd have to be the Rated PG Superstar now, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know if they even still introduce me as that now in the,
right.
the era of what it is, but it was still all over my merchandise, so I don't know. You know, the thing was, there was really, I just upped the intensity of how I wrestled, really. That was the only major difference, and trying to come up with conniving ways to do things. Really, the only thing that changed with that character is the people I was working against. And it generally ended up being, you know, big, muscular monsters. So that was easy for me to play the, you know, the Green Goblin or the Joker to that. And that's really the only thing that changed. You go from, let's say, doing, you know, TLC matches with the Hardys and the Dudleys, and then, you know, now I'm wrestling The Undertaker and Batista and, you know, John Cena and guys like that. And it was really just a tweak of the wrestling style that made the character, I think, kind of work. It was the foils.
Sure. Yeah, and some amazing performances in terms of the foils, as you said, and being that villain off of a lot of, you know, inspiring good guy comebacks in the ring in those spots, and you're always right in position, and it was a pleasure to see you perform as a babyface, but also as a heel, especially where you really, you know, truly excelled and had your main event run. What do you think of the more kid-friendly direction of the current WWE product? Because I'd imagine that, you know, some of your breakthrough stuff with Lita and the live thing that you did, let's put it that way, those things probably wouldn't happen today. You know, it'd be different.
I don't think he would be able to get away with that stuff, you know, now. And I think if things can still work, obviously, it's just going to be in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see Daniel Bryan now, who has gotten so over from yes, 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 and no, no, no.
Right.
And so it's still possible to do. It's just, you know, you just got to be creative. And he's a creative guy. He's a smart guy. So he's taken something and run with it. And now what he's doing with Kane, some people might not like it. I think it's great. I think the show needs to have those elements. And that's something that, you know, people always harken back to the Attitude Era and before. Man, I remember growing up watching Slick dance and sing through the streets. And I was like, yes, that's the kind of idea, you know, a king being born magically out of a garbage can in the ghetto. It's like, it's ridiculous, but it was fun. And so I like seeing, you know, those two sitting in a diner and acting out When Harry Met Sally. I get a kick out of that stuff. As long as you still temper it with a nice, you know, Dolph Ziggler, Kofi Kingston match.
Right. You've done several shots for the WWE in terms of live appearances and things and interviews since you've retired, including recently an appearance on SmackDown to plug Haven, as we talked about the sci-fi series that you're making occasional appearances on this season. How long did it take after you announced your retirement very emotionally on TV to actually settle into post-wrestling life? I'm sure it wasn't just an overnight thing.
It honestly wasn't as bad as I thought it would be if you had asked me a year before I retired.
Mm-hmm.
But I had already, in my mind, started to set in motion the idea of, okay, this isn't going to be too much longer. You know, at the most, we're looking at probably 40 years old. You know, so I was looking at maybe 2.5 more years at the very most, just because I knew how my body felt. And I knew something felt off. I didn't know quite to the extent. I'd been, you know, wrestling with the neck pain again since I started wrestling Batista, and in no way a commentary on his ability or anything like that, because I loved wrestling him. I think he's really talented, but that powerbomb really started to take its toll on me.
Mm.
And that's when I started to feel the neck again. I was like, ooh, all right. And part of your job, I mean, I was the heel on the show, so my job is to make those guys look superhuman. So that's bounce around a lot. You know, still wisely and smartly as you can, but, you know, Dave's 6'3", 280, Undertaker's 6'10", 300, Big Show is 7 feet, 500 pounds. Well, guess who's the one getting thrown around at 6'4", 230 at that point, like 240, 250? It's going to be me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that's another thing, too, that kind of get lost in the translation. Because of those guys that big, people forget that I wasn't a small wrestler. I don't know. Well, let's a smaller wrestler, let's say like a Daniel Bryan or a CM Punk. It's like I'm actually a lot bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I gotta figure out a way to do both, and that ended up taking a toll.
Who's the smoothest guy you've ever worked with in the ring?
The smoothest?
Yeah, the smoothest in terms of, you know, it came naturally and from day one.
Randy Orton is very smooth.
Hmm.
He has different movements and mannerisms where he doesn't even know he's doing it. It's just instinct. It's just born in him. You know, and you'll see him do things and you're like, ooh, that was good. And nobody else could necessarily do it because it's just the way he moves. Kurt Angle is another guy who picked up on it so quick. You know, and then there's guys that just moved differently, that did things differently, like the way that Eddie would explode into things and pop his hips into things. Just, you know, each guy, every guy I've wrestled has something that they do better than others necessarily. Because I've always said who's the best ever, it's too subjective, because who I might think, someone else might not. So I think it's too tough to say who the best ever was. But from a fluid standpoint, I'd have to say, you know, Randy would be that guy.
You mentioned Eddie, of course, the legendary late Eddie Guerrero, a beloved friend of yours who passed in 2006. And anybody that's followed pro wrestling, you know, mourned that death pretty hard. Tell us about because it's a tough business, Edge, with a lot of demands on the body and the mind. What about in your sense, the evolution of how the WWE in particular has addressed the wellness of its talent, the health of its talent, you know, in terms of the different medical screenings that go on and things like that. You know, how did that evolve in your career at WWE, particularly after the passing of Eddie Guerrero?
It has evolved, and thankfully, I think everything has evolved. I think just knowledge on everything, on what concussions can do, whether it be football or hockey or WWE. Now there just seems to be so much more knowledge, and there's still, you know, thousands of miles to go on that. But it just seems like everyone is much more knowledgeable now, and I think now things can be diagnosed that for decades haven't been.
Mm-hmm.
Because now there's studies for it. Now there's a name that they can actually attach to it. I think this was probably going on in all of these industries as long as there's been these industries, but just now it's getting to the point where it's not being ignored and it's actually being looked at and going, ooh, okay, we can actually take from examples in the past and see that things are happening. You know, when you have football players shooting themselves in the chest so that they can leave their brain to be looked at. I mean, that's saying something. So I think it's an evolution of sports in general that things have had to start changing.
Tell us about the injury that ultimately ended your career.
Originally, I guess it started in 2003 when I had my initial neck surgery, and I had a fusion from C5 to C7. Being a glutton for punishment, I decided that wrestling 8 more years after that would be a good idea, but I still felt like I had so much to accomplish that it just, I couldn't close it at that point. From that, I developed spinal stenosis, which is, you know, can be caused from trauma or it can be hereditary. Mine was caused, you know, from the trauma of still bumping. What it is, essentially, it's a narrowing of the spinal column, which choked out your spinal cord. So where mine got to, and the reason I was feeling weird is because mine is being pinched like a straw. So on my left side, you know, my arm will just start to shiver and kind of shake uncontrollably, twitch, you know, lose the feeling in it, things like that, because there's constant pressure on that side. On my right side, I have 1 millimeter of room left. So I actually, I go in and get surgery November 8th. I finally decided, okay, it's time. You know, I've put up the surgery that, you know, I had to retire because of it, but I'm just getting the surgery now because things just kept coming up, whether it was Haven, Hall of Fame, Haven again. I was like, oh, okay, let's, you know, grit the teeth and get through this. Now I have, you know, I opened up my schedule so that I can just sit here for about 3 or 4 months and recuperate. But, you know, with that type of injury, it's not something that, it basically grows and it chokes out your spinal cord. It grows toward your spinal cord. So there's nothing you can really do about it. They can go out, clean it out, and I might need another fusion on top of that. But essentially it's, you know, people ask me, can you come back for one more match? And it's like, well, the doctors told me, no, I can't. And I'm going to take their opinion, and they won't clear me to wrestle anyway. So it's kind of a moot point.
Right.
Like, come on, you can come back for one more. It's like, well, I don't have a choice in the matter here.
Right, right. Even if I wanted to. I
could go wrestle in somebody's backyard, but I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, you're not. Yeah, that's not. You're not 15 anymore. You don't have to do that, Edge. I think you've earned the privilege.
No.
Well, is it frustrating though? Because so often in wrestling, you know, retirements are used as a storyline, right? They're used as a way, you know, a guy is going to take a hiatus for one reason or another, and the audience is told in the context of storyline that, you know, he's been retired or he's been fired or he's never coming back. Wrestling fans are sort of conditioned to hear a guy retire and you know, maybe second guess it and wonder if it's a storyline. In your case, it clearly isn't, and I think as time has gone, it's become more clear. The fans, I think, have become more attuned to when they're hearing a legitimate speech as far as retirement and when they're hearing something that's in the context of a storyline. But is it frustrating to you in a way to really have to convince people that you really can't, you know, wrestle anymore? That, you know, you're in a world where people are used to actually being skeptical or thinking it might be a storyline when somebody says that?
Yeah, it could be a little frustrating. You know, I think people have gotten more of an understanding, but a lot of people think it was my choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, well, why don't you just go back for more? It's like, well, I haven't been given that option. The WWE doctors will not allow me to step foot in that ring again. So it made it easier retirement-wise because, like, okay, well, if you're not going to let me do it, I guess I can't do it. But it's kind of frustrating to, you know, it's like that was the only part that, listen, if I could do one more, I'd do one more. They won't let me do one more, so what are you going to do? So that part of it is, you know, was a little frustrating initially. That's kind of part and parcel with this industry. The lines of reality get blurred so many times that you can lose track of, you know, what is actually happening and what is just storyline based. I had a lot of people tell me at first, when I first started doing the retirement speech, they expected Alberto's music to hit.
Right.
Until it got, you know, further in, it was like, oh, wait, this is real. It's one of those injuries that you know, it's just not going to allow for one more match. As much as, hey, it'd be great to come back, WrestleMania, wrestle Christian, do it. Hey, that would be awesome. And if by some, chance they ever told me that, I'd give it a shot, but I've been told that's not going to happen. So yeah, you have to wrap your mind around it and go, okay, well, moving on. And that's kind of it.
Is there something about, of course, everyone knows, or a lot of people know, your lifelong friendship going back to childhood with Christian, and, you know, a desire on your part to maybe try to have your final match with him. Is there something particular about Christian? I mean, is there something where you'll come back if, you know, you get the word from the doctors? I fully hear what you're saying there. Let's say in that hypothetical you do get the comeback. Is it a sort of thing, Edge, where you're like, yeah, but only if it's with Christian? I mean, I don't really want to come back to work any old match.
Yeah, I mean, even if in a completely perfect and hypothetical world they said, yeah, you could do one more, I don't want to come back and, wrestle a match on Saturday morning Slam or something. But no, I want to come back. And although that would be fun, I would love to wrestle Santino in a Saturday morning Slam match, maybe a triple threat with Heath Slater too.
Yeah.
If I'm going to do it, it would be against, you know, him. It would have to be, because that would be my last match, and there's no other person that my last match could be against if, you know, I could have the choice.
Where did the name Edge come from?
It wasn't a very good story. It was one of those, like, they had a bunch of names floating around, and I didn't like any of them. I really just wanted to use Adam Copeland, but at that point, everybody had a character name. And I was listening to a radio station up through Albany, and it was, Edge 10-something, and that was it. So I pitched Edge, and that was it. That was all there was to it.
Why did you cut your hair?
I was just tired of it.
Yeah.
Now that I have it cut, I look back, and if I see something with long hair, I'm like, man, it made me look tired. You know, I was really tired at that point, too. But, it was just time. You know, I'd never really thought about it a whole lot. I just went, hey, let's try this. Boom, and did it. And that was really it. I didn't realize the uproar it would cause, actually, with the male demographic.
Yeah.
Guys were very, very, very depressed that I chopped my hair off. I like it a lot better. Now that I've figured out how to do short hair, at first I was still trying to figure it out. I had this weird wavy kind of Kennedy type look, but now I realized it just got to go short, just really short, and I can pull it off.
Well, Edge, leave us with this. Besides the occasional appearances in the WWE ring and on the WWE television screen and some of the acting you've been able to put together, what's life like now for you?
Well, right now I am, I've been running a few errands this morning, but I'm sitting in a pair of flannel animal pants from the Muppets with a teacup poodle curled up in my lap in front of the fireplace. My Australian Shepherd, who is deaf, is curled up on the other chair, and going to go down to the basement, work out. Then I'm going to ride my mountain bike, then walk the dogs, then a few more errands, and settle in, have a nice dinner, and relax. So it's been busy, but I make sure to take these days and fully enjoy them. You know, in between doing promotional stuff for Haven, whether it's or appearances here and there. You know, I'm making sure to actually enjoy life too. You know, I'm keeping a nice little trying to keep the scales balanced. You know, because about the scale was so far tipped the other way before, and I like the fact that now I don't have to answer to anyone. I don't have to jump. I can just say, yeah, I'll make it up to Philly and do something fun with Kane and Daniel Bryan and, you know, promote Haven. Everybody wins. Cool. All right. Yeah, I'll do that. But it's nice to be able to have that freedom right now. And so I'm making sure to enjoy life, too.
And we're grateful that you took some time to join us on the Mouthpiece Wrestling Show here on NBC Sports Radio 1510 AM Boston. He is the Rated R Superstar, Edge. Edge, we thank you so much for your candor and your time this afternoon, and best of luck in the future. I'm sure we'll talk to you again.
Thanks. Appreciate it.